Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, monthly Q&A episode for May 2017. It's Chris and Nick, Nick and Chris, Nis and Crick. We're here. Hi.
Do we want to get, like, a celebrity couple nickname, you know?
I mean, like, why not?
Bradgelina or something like that? Do we want to go for one?
I mean, you know, if you're cool.
Okay, great. It's not like I want or anything. Baka. Yeah.
Couple nicknames were cool before. I got a couple nicknames before. It was cool.
Yeah, those are. I had one when I got my baby memories. Yeah, it's the May Q&A. The Maka, if you were to pronounce them.
Q&A.
Yeah.
It's the Q&A. It's fine.
Nicky, yeah, pick a sentence.
Last month would have been the Q&A in April.
That one works a lot better.
It does, honestly. Yeah. We're going to answer some questions from you guys, the lovely audience who has been sending them in, and we're still several months behind, but that's cool. Keep on sending your questions in for us if you want us to answer it on the show. And also, of course, we welcome any and all answers that you guys send us for questions that we ask you. Do we have some of those, Chris?
Yes. Last time we asked, I believe, two different questions. The first was the question, if you were to pick a theme song either for a manga character or for either Nick or myself, what would it be? And I believe you also kind of put out there the question you asked me about if you were ever underwhelmed by something that kind of had a lot of build up to it. So we got a couple answers for those. Kenny Varn suggested for the Straw Hats, Running Wild, that's the band, Riding the Storm. It's a metal song. I've not heard of it before. I listened to it, and it is a pretty big metal song. I guess it was used in Brutal Legend, which is where Kenny heard of it. But it does feel like it. The Great Rhapsode suggested for Zorro, Two Steps from Hell, The Strength of 1,000 Men. I could see that. I feel like any Two Steps from Hell, that's pretty good for like any epic-sounding character. And for Bakugo, they suggested Trap's Wasteland. And
yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Any Trap song.
I actually know that song.
Yeah. It feels appropriate for Bakugo.
Lots of Trap songs do have to do with feelings of inadequacy and overcoming that feeling, so.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hurt suggested for me the Dennis Leary asshole song. I'm not sure what that is, but I can grasp.
It's the one that goes, I'm an asshole, yo.
Okay, you know what? It all fits. It works perfectly there. And for you, he suggested Godsmack whatever.
I hate Godsmack.
Oh. Well, I guess not to be. He also suggested then for Tsukasa.
You know, whatever.
Tsukasa from Dr. Stone, he suggested Genesis's original Land of Confusion, which I think is quite appropriate. Julian Green suggested for Soma the Lion King song Hakuna Matata, which feels really right just for how little.
That's fucking brilliant.
How little Soma gives a fuck about anything. For Kirishima, suggested for Mulan, I'll Make a Man Out of You. For Brokey, suggested the Ohio player's skin type.
Shouldn't that be for some sort of female character that's trying to make it, though? You know, because there's a whole double meaning in Man of You.
Yeah, I mean, you lose a level of like, you lose a layer in it. But Kirishima's all about being a man, you know, so I think it
like
works for
him. I like this Shonen Jump Disney crossover thing that you've got going on, though. That's good.
Yeah. And last one here is from Your Worst Daydream, and this is someone who was talking about something they were underwhelmed by. They were underwhelmed massively by Undertale, saying people wouldn't shut up about it.
Oh.
But the number one thing everyone said was no spoilers, since the game had to be played blind to truly experience its wonder. I eventually got it, while avoiding spoilers for like a year, and I gotta say I was severely underwhelmed by Undertale. Maybe it was the overhyped, but while I acknowledge it deconstructed many RPG tropes and was definitely unique and clever, I didn't think it was fun, and the more I played, the more I grew to hate every character in the game except Temmie.
Except who?
Temmie?
Oh, Temmie. Okay, gotcha. No, I don't know how anyone could hate Temmie, honestly. Well, I actually do, but yeah.
Yeah, I know
and
that.
I can totally see that. I can actually totally see getting sick of a lot of characters in that show. I personally absolutely despise Alpheus, and I once went on a mini rant on Twitter saying that the genocide route should allow you to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's kind of kind of crazy. All right. So yeah, those are our questions or our answers that we got from you guys last month, but we're going to pose a couple new questions for you guys. So feel free to,
that's great.
Yeah. Feel free to send them in. I thought for this month, there's going to be a little bit of a theme with this and the question I'm going to ask you, Nick. So for okay. the question I'm posing to our audience, it is, if there were a character in manga that you could mentor underneath, just assume that they're essentially going to be your Kakashi. They're going to be your new teacher / parental figure as much as need be. They are going to guide you in every aspect of your life, essentially. They are going to mold you into your new person. Think you are going to be the Rock Lee to their guy, Sensei.
Gotcha.
Who would you want to pick? Who would you want to learn underneath? Who would you want to become an expert with? Or alternatively, because I like to put a little twist in these sometimes, if you were to do the inverse, if you were to become a mentor to one of these characters, who would you pick? With the only qualification being, you must pose, essentially, some expertise as to your reason for why you're becoming. It could be real or fake expertise, I don't care. But you need to give some reason as to why you're mentoring this character. So you can't just say,
So I'm mentoring them on being, on how to be a smarky asshole, basically.
Yeah, you could do that. Or you could just lie, Nick, and say that you have 10 PhDs in nuclear physics. I don't know. Who am I to question you? This is the internet. Everything's up for debate. So, gotcha. Yeah. If you have an answer to any of those questions, feel free to send them in weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com and we'll read our favorite answers next month at the start of the Q&A.
Sweet.
And to continue that, Nick, we have a question for one another. And my question to you is a little bit different from our usual sorts of questions. Usually it's kind of a more broad answer kind of topic that's brought up. But I'm about to start going to school again. And I wanted to ask you, Nick, as somebody who's gone through college, has been through that life, what advice do you have to give to a near 30-year-old who's about to be starting college?
Make sure that you are honestly just like, don't get in the habit of putting anything off. Make sure that you find a rhythm to keep up with your work and to keep up with your studies. And, it's not just for the matter of, oh, you know, you'll never be able to catch up whenever it's exam time comes around or something like that. It really is just, you know, this stage of education is specifically something that has to be self-driven. And if you allow yourself to get out of the mindset of I'm here to learn and to improve myself, it can be very difficult to get back into it.
So what you're saying is I may have to change my regular routine of watching 3+ hours of Impractical Jokers reruns that I've already seen just because I feel like I have nothing else to do with my life. And I should be drinking the entire time. Yeah, 3 hours, you know, every day, every couple 3 hours sometimes even, you know.
I mean, if you're talking about, you know, watching 3 hours of Impractical Jokers twice every 3 hours, then yeah, that's clearly too much.
Clearly you have problems with your time responsibility then.
Even 3 hours every 3 hours is probably too much.
Yeah. You need to eat at some time, right?
Well, you know, like, honestly, I do, I have a lot less spare time than I used to as a result of, you know, doing stuff for the podcast, doing stuff with my friends, doing stuff with my girlfriend, doing work and doing stuff for class. But I do still have plenty of spare time. Mm-hmm. It's really just kind of a matter of you have to recognize that you do have less of it. And so you have to actually prioritize it a little better. But I think that you can handle that.
Hmm. Thank you for that. I'm glad I got a vote of confidence. I've taken like my placement exams and everything like that. Did not do well in math. Mm-hmm. I have to take basic algebra to start, but.
Oh, wow.
I forgot too many of the rules to algebra. I'm great at algebra. Algebra is just problem solving for me. It's like a logic puzzle, but I forgot rules in between, you know, 10+ years of being out of school. So I'm gonna have to take that again, essentially, but. I'm doing better than the rest of my family, where my brother basically had to start with a class that ended with long division. So, oof. I'm looking forward to at least being one step ahead of that.
That's more than one step, Chris.
Yeah, I asked him. I was like, "So when did you eventually get like a credit?" He's like, you know, like 3 class later." He's like, "Did you ever get to algebra?" He's like, "No,
Jesus
no, never got algebra."
Wow. God, that took Took WandaVision like elementary school.
Well, yeah, it's just he was that bad at math that when he went to go to school, you know, after the fact, it was, yeah. Well, my brother's not a great guy.
Oh, man. And they say you never use math in real life.
Hey, being shitty at math also caused him to have to go to a session of hot yoga for a bet, so there's that too.
Oh, man. I do have a question for you, but it's significantly more laid back of a question.
Okay. No, go for it.
What's the weirdest thing that you did on vacation in Spain?
The weirdest thing?
I know you've told some stories about this, but it's
I'm trying.
Or like the weirdest place you visited, maybe.
Well, we went to a couple different museums. We went to the Picasso Museum. I don't know if that's weird per se, although it is actually very interesting to see the Picasso Museum. One, because it's that thing that kind of exists inherently within art where you're just like, what's the worth in this? Cause one of the standout pieces of it is like a bull's head made out of a bicycle seat and a bicycle like handle. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this sucks. What is, like, this, this dude has done so many amazing pieces of art. This is worthless. This is nothing.
He's just like in the middle of this museum in Spain. He's like, does anyone else see this? And everyone else is like, okay.
I'm just like, no, none of this anymore. We all have to acknowledge how worthless this is. There were some good pieces in there.
Esta arte está brillante porque...
No comprende. Es puta.
Señor.
But there were some cool things in there. I actually saw a sculpture he had made. I can't find any images of it online afterwards, which is a shame, but it's called The Dead Man's Head. And looking at it, I actually wonder if at some point Shimabukuro hadn't seen it and it was actually the inspiration for Neo's design, because it had that very same sort of face to it, or, you know, completely smooth but like concaved in eyes, and like a rounded nose was the only real feature on top of it. It definitely looked a lot like the early appearances of Neo when it was like that weird, goofy looking face.
Hmm.
Outside of that, it was mostly, I guess the weirdest places would have been stopping in at a couple different fast food places and just being like confused at how they run things. I'm like, hold on a moment. I can get a beer at Taco Bell. This is cray cray. Someone's got to get this under control.
You talking about the Picasso Museum reminds me of a long time ago in Texas. We went to some modern art museum. The very first piece that we saw was literally just this, like, I don't know, freaking like 5x8 foot canvas or some shit like that, where the top half was painted black and the bottom half was white.
See, yeah, like,
that's it.
Here's the thing. I get that, like, idea
of
like,
you kidding me?
Because we went to a different museum at first. We went to one when we were in Madrid, and I apologize because I'm blanking on what the name of it was, but it was a museum that focused primarily on, the works of, it's just different Spanish painters. So like Raphael was in there and a whole bunch of other people. And mostly every piece of art in there were, Christian themed pieces of art or portraits of various figures in early Spanish history. And I could appreciate those for a moment in time, but after a while, I'm just like, this is just a painting of a person. And I've seen this like 17,000 times in this museum already. Like, there's gotta be something different in here. It's like, no, there's no other, it's just portraits. I'm like, look, all right, not for nothing. This is boring me to tears at this point, because there's nothing for me to get out of it after a while. Like, I just walk in and I'm like, sure looks like a person. That one also looks like a person. I don't know what you want me to get out of this. I'm sorry.
Anyway, let's get to talking about questions about a form of artwork that we regularly critique.
now
that we've exposed ourselves as being freaking basic, uneducated motherfuckers.
I want to stress this real quick, so people who are like any art majors who are listening don't think I'm shitting on the medium. I like art in a great deal, and I loved all of the like expressionist or abstract stuff that was done in the Picasso Museum. That stuff I absolutely can understand. There's definitely a value in looking at something, kind of almost like the Rorschach test, like looking at something and seeing what you can get out of it. But there are certain times where you look at something like, that is a pair of bicycle handles and a bicycle seat. I get that it looks like a bull's head. This is not worthy of being prominently displayed in a museum. Like, this is not that crazy.
Why did you destroy a perfectly good bicycle for this, Pablo?
Yeah, I'm like, Picasso. What, Picasso, senor, what are you doing? Come on. Chico, what are you, come on, get your shit together.
Es tu una cabeza del toro. Yeah, I get that, but.
Yeah, I. Un puta! Un puta!
Senor, that's a noise.
There are some people who speak absolutely no Spanish who are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Look, I've been watching a lot of Narcos. I picked up on what the angry expletives are.
Oh, man. All right, so now all the people who took Spanish in high school slash listened to Rammstein in high school know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think that we'll start answering questions now.
Yeah, do you want to start off or shall I?
I guess I'll start us off.
Okay.
With questions that we got from Mindy. Mm-hmm. Dear Tease Ain't Rollo Alone, and Why Me Sad Ruler of Time. I live in San Francisco, which has a great Japantown, including a manga cafe that's full of kitschy retro anime goods, TVs playing Ghibli movies and other popular things, and tons of shelves of manga. The other problem is it's pretty much all in Japanese except for a small shelf. Still go there for a lot of some great curry, Ayakadon, and atmosphere. My question is, what do you think it would take for a manga cafe to be successful in the U.S. outside of a niche culture center like Japantown? I think given it is good, affordable food, but it would probably have to advertise itself as more of a literary cafe with mainstream books, or maybe with a focus on several types of comics rather than just manga. That is a tough one, honestly.
I think, first and foremost, it would have to be in one of those places in the U.S. that kind of exists with, I don't know what the term you'd use for it is. I don't want to say alternative because it's not alternative, but, you'd have to put in a big city. You'd have to put in somewhere like an Austin, Texas or San Francisco, or maybe you could put it in actually, I don't know how well it would do in New York, but I think it'd probably work there. It would have to be in a metropolitan area because you'd have to basically bank on the fact that there are a lot of people into whatever this niche thing is that would warrant getting enough business to actually stay in business, essentially.
Right. It doesn't have to be in a niche culture center, like you say, but it's got to have a dense enough population to that there would be, a wide enough customer base.
I think what might work, because there are still, like, internet cafes in America, and I know that's something that's a lot bigger outside of America. Like, I think those are still how many, like, in China or South Korea, I think that's still how a lot of like MMOs and MOBAs actually get a lot of business, is people going to the internet cafes and things like that. So they do. I think the potential for it to exist is there. And I think the viability of it is going to increase as manga and things like that, anime, continue to kind of grow in America. But if you're trying to, I think it would hurt to try to sell it as anything but what it is. Cause I don't think you're going to pull in too many. Like, you're not going to get a lot of foot traffic into that place. No, I don't think a lot of people are going to be walking down the street and just be like, oh, honey, this place is called the Dragon Ball. Let's go inside and see what's up with this. Oh, that's a whole bunch of weird characters and girls in precariously short skirts. This sounds like a comfortable place for me and my family to sit down and eat. I think it would have to be some place that people are going to kind of know about. Maybe almost something that expands from, like, locally done. Like, I'm almost starting to think, like, a club or something like that that then expand, like, gets enough, like, members that it starts to expand into something that eventually becomes, like, a business.
It might not need to be in a niche location, but it would have to do, like, niche advertising in order to get the word out for it.
Yeah, or maybe something had to do something like events or something. Because I'm trying to think, what would entice me to go? Like, if I knew there was one nearby me, but maybe not like directly in my town. Like there's one like 30 minutes away. Like what would drive me to go that big? I feel like it had to be like certain events or something like that that would go on there that I'd be like, oh, let me go out and check that out. You know what, Nick? I'm gonna throw this idea out there.
Okay.
Someone should make a manga cafe where they regularly are like, hey, we're gonna have Nick and Chris here to do live episodes of Weekly Manga Recap, and we show up. And look, if I'm just saying, if Mark Cuban's listening and he wants to fund this, this is like a $10 billion idea I'm just throwing out there. So, take it, do what you will. That's how I think it would work.
Anyway.
No, but thank you for the question, Mindy. It is actually, it's interesting to think about that.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea to consider, yes.
All right. Next question here is from Kenny Varnes. Says, Dear Chris, Larios, and Nick, Freeman.
You did a great job on those backwards shouts. That's good.
So the start of this is about a series of different stands that he's originally made up, and there's some very unique ones in there. However, we're trying to get through this backlog, so I won't spend too much time. I just do want to say, Kenny, I do appreciate those. He does have a question note here. He says, have you ever read the infamous Jotaro Kakyon Dojin by the legendary four-girl band Clamp of Cardcaptor Sakura fame? If you haven't,
can't say that I ever would directly went out and sought that one out.
Nope, I don't think I've read a original Clamp production or Clamp piece per se, unless we've done one as a review.
We're gonna have to get to like Sakura or something eventually, but yeah.
Yeah, I know I've read a couple chapters of something at some point, but I haven't read anything of their original stuff. I definitely haven't read any of their doujin. Certainly not of their Yaoi. Dojin? I don't know if that...
Jotaro Kakyoin Yaoi Dojin, in which apparently Kakyoin lays an egg.
Mm-hmm. He says Kakyoin lays an egg. It hatches out and out pops a chibi Jojo. His name is Jota. The stand is called Charmy Green because Jotaro found a bottle of dishwasher brand with the same name, and being the dumbass he is, names it after it, thus combo-breaking the musical slash tarot motif. The worst part about it is not a single hint of it being the work of an enemy stand is present throughout the dojin. It's played completely seriously because it's a shitty JoJo slash fic made by fangirls who just happen to be professional mangaka. All right. No, we haven't read it. Maybe that'll be a Sadistic September one year.
Spend the whole month on, like, one short dojin.
Yeah, I'm like, it took us 20 minutes to read this, but... We gotta take this in parts, cause I'm pretty furious. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm this furious about something that doesn't impact me in any way. Was it presented as being a legit, I mean, it's doujin. It's for fun by nature.
It's taken us a week to read Incarnate. It's gonna take us like 3 months to read this 20-page doujin.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, it's mind-boggling. Why would he lay an egg? Kakyon's a bird. That's ridiculous. He's also dead. Spoilers, that's but crazy. He's dead. This is weird.
Also, how can he possibly do that unless a parasite is inserted into his anus that allows him to get pregnant? Come on.
Yeah. Besides, they already broke the terror motif halfway through fucking the JoJo part 3 anyway, so it's not as though this is that.
We kind of ran out of tarot cards to go. Yeah.
And then she was like, ah, shit, there's only 21 of these. I blew this one pretty bad.
Maybe I could do Knight of Cups. I don't fucking know.
Starts doing, what was it, Deck of Many Things?
Yeah. Next questions come from Gelly Elfson. Let's see here. On the off chance that Yahoo goes under, do you have an alternative email address for WMR? We do not. I'm not really worried that Yahoo is going to go under anytime soon. If news comes out that it is, then yes, we will make the migration over to, let's face it, Gmail.
Probably.
I might try to be hipster and make it Hotmail.
I just try to make it like the 90s again. I'm like, got my GeoCities email.
Get us like a Roadrunner email address.
Yeah. Guys, you can find us weekly manga recap at earthlink.net. At Netscape.
Or Comcast, you know, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why.
I'm sure that it's not going to happen, though. So.
Well, even if Yahoo went down, wouldn't somebody, I presume, pick up the rights to it and just have it as, like, because Hotmail doesn't exist anymore, but Google has it. Like, if you go for a Gmail,
there are still Hotmail
email
addresses that exist that people use that they've not had to change.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be fine. Don't worry about it. There's also a proposal for a new theme month that Gelly Elfson has, which is, how about a Dungeons and Dragons inspired one that I like to call D&D December, held in December. You'd be surprised how many series are inspired by D&D and RPGs in general. Enough to do the theme month at least 3 times. That's actually a pretty interesting idea, because you're right, there are a shit ton of, like, we're trapped in the game manga out there.
Yeah.
So, interesting idea.
There's also another question here, you may have missed it, in regarding to picking new series, because we had passed the goal on Patreon at that point. to add new series to the recap. And he's mentioning, it would probably be for Jump or Crunchyroll since they're the two biggest legal providers of manga.
Right.
Unless there's another alternative. They're asking, is there an alternative?
Oh, there's an alternative.
I don't know if there are too many. I do know that Comixology,
yes,
Comixology gets some. They also, you can get your Shonen Jump subscription through there, and I think they have a couple other non-Jump series that they get in there regularly. I feel like there's other sites, and I'm blanking on them, but I do know that they are out there. If you search them, I know you can find them. But Comixology is the other big one I would note. All right. Next question here. This is from Mike. It says, "Hey, Nick and Chris." No crazy names on that one. So I'm going to read this one with a lot less enthusiasm. When it comes to adaptations in manga, do you find you enjoy the story if it takes the pre-existing story and decides to tell its own version of it? Or would you rather see a manga that tells its own unique story set in that universe?
I prefer the former. I mean, if you're going to do like your own unique story that just happens to have the same setting, then it's like, well, I don't really know who these characters are, so I don't really care.
Yeah, I think it could work if you blend the two a little bit, because like Pokemon Adventures, they don't follow the story of the games to any letter, really. They take the basic concept. There are Pokemon that you capture. They have levels. You battle them. There are gym leaders and badges. And there's usually a villain antagonist group out there. And that's more or less it. Like, they don't... Type advantages don't even seem to play too big of an advantage in the Pokemon Adventure series or things
like that. Well, yeah, but it's still a version of the main story of each of the games. For the most part, obviously certain arcs in it do have almost completely original plots, but, you know, the first one's about fighting Team Rocket, the third one's about Team Aqua and Team Magma trying to cause this cataclysm, and also each of the arcs does focus on the, you know, protagonists of the games. So there's that familiarity anyway, where it's like, oh, okay, here's that character I played as going and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the point of doing an adaptation would be if you're not going to do a completely different story. At the very least, I think that, well, I guess it depends on how far separate you're talking. Like, are you at least saying you're going to use like the same main characters when you do that?
Cause the example that Mike gives is Legends having a different plot and characters in the anime and manga respectively. So I guess in that way, you could even consider it like how Full Metal Alchemist and the anime, the original one, and the Full Metal Alchemist manga have wildly different plots. And that's not because of the same
core group of characters.
Yeah. But it's just that idea of, I guess, cause I don't know how far you have to go to still consider it even the same property. I guess you'd have to presume we have similar characters at least, right? Or else there's nothing tying you together. Otherwise, it's just a remake or what would you call it? An adaptation? No, I guess not an adaptation.
Well, let's try and make an example out of, like, you know, Pokemon, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, what if instead of someone going on their own Pokemon journey, it's about, like, I don't know, some random schmoes on a fucking path who wait for the trainer to come by so that they can battle them. I don't know.
Oh, it's the story of youngster Joey. He just sits there all day. He just sits there being like, my Rattata is the tits. This Rattata is so great. He's just calling random people. Hey, have I told you about how awesome my Rattata is? And just every other person on the other end's like, God damn it, Joey, I've got things to do!
And even that's not like a completely original plot. That's still taking cues from the game, Chris. Like, what is the difference?
Yeah, I think the Pokemon Adventure series, I guess, is probably the closest to how I like seeing it done in that they take aspects of it, but they don't do it entirely verbatim. It's particularly when it came to the Johto part, because the story in Silver and Gold to this day is still pretty garbage, but they managed to make that into something a lot more interesting in the manga by putting in basically an entirely new idea of having, like, oh, one of the gym leaders is actually the real
antagonist. Who's the Mask of Ice, Chris? Who's the Mask of Ice?
Yeah, no one knows.
Who could be the Mask of Ice?
It's an ice
base. The guy who uses ice Pokemon. No, that's insane.
No, who knows? I mean, he hasn't... Everything that would make him suspicious has happened, and nothing's refuted. Nothing has come in to be contrary evidence, but... all right, question two from Mike that he says, who would you rather see the final opponents of the Straw Hats Who would you like to see the final opponents the Straw Hats face in the series be? Ikanu and the Marines, Red Shanks, the Red-Haired Pirates, Teach and the Blackbeard Pirates, someone else. Who would you pick, basically?
Absolutely not Shanks. I don't really...
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, I guess that they're technically an opposing force, but I would never choose them to be the Straw Hats' final opponents.
I think what how I'm understanding this question is that idea of who is this series, Kaguya going to be, as opposed to what is the final battle in that being? Because there was still the fight between Sasuke and Naruto, which you could still call the final fight, but not the final antagonist. I believe the final antagonist should and probably will be, Blackbeard's crew, because that is the most interesting opponent for Luffy to fight at the end, because it isn't someone who can necessarily look at and say, you know, you're fighting against my dreams or whatever. Blackbeard wants much of the same thing. He's just as much of a dreamer. He's just evil about it. He's just evil pirate version of Luffy's optimistic kind of pirate. But I do think that the idea of having a series end with something like a fight between Luffy and Shanks.
So a feel-good fight as opposed to a fight for the fate of the world.
Yeah, or a fight to be Pirate King. Because let's say the danger's over, but could still only be one. Let's see who gets the rights to it. Like, yeah, it could be something like that. Or it could even be Luffy versus Zoro. Or, like, maybe because Buggy's kind of undergone a very slow face turn over the course of the series. He's still a dickhead, but he's not the same person he was at the start. Maybe Luffy fights Buggy as, like, a way to kind of, like, open and close One Piece. Kobe, another great option. Something like that. So I think the options are there, but if you ask for, like...
That's an interesting question, then, yeah.
Yeah. So if I were to say the final antagonist, I would say Blackbeard's crew. They're the best ones I feel to fit them. All right. Good questions there, Mike.
All right. This one comes from Squeeploop.
Squeeploop.
Dear Y Ruler of characters that are never going to be important, and Rolo T, screenwriter of 20XX Best Picture nominee The Revenant 2. Number one, I've been wondering about something for a while, namely the concept of suspension of disbelief, because I think that the degree to which disbelief could be suspended varies between genres and settings. I want to ask, what do you think a series can do to break that suspension?
That's entirely dependent on the individual
really
things.
Is.
And it's not even based on like a standard within the genre or the individual piece. Every individual person has things that break them. I think I've used this example before, but Randy, the good friend of mine, he loses his suspension of disbelief every time he sees Stan Lee show up in a Marvel movie. Cause he's like, I'm looking at Stan Lee. I'm no longer lost in the movie. I myself and many others have no issue with that, but I totally understand that logic of like, oh, I'm seeing a real person. I have to stop pretending that's Robert Downey Jr. and not Iron Man to sit here and be like, oh, well, that's Stan Lee, even though he's in a role or something like that, you know?
Right. It is for the most part going to be different for every person. I think that the big killer is if a movie sets up rules and then breaks them.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's just like, okay, clearly there's no consistency now in your writing. You wrote yourself into a corner and you had to do something different. And now that I'm considering that, I am considering this as a work of fiction that has been written by someone else and not something that is happening.
And I think kind of to attach to that, a series that breaks its rules, just as bad would be a series that just doesn't have rules. But that's kind of one of my big issues with Fairy Tale is like characters' powers and everything like that. And the world is so nebulously defined that oftentimes when some character gets a big power up or something like that, it doesn't mean anything to me because I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, there's really no context for what you're doing. I presume you have like 8 levels beyond this or something like that. I don't know. I mean, you seem to just pull new armors out whenever you need them, Urza. I don't know. But... it kind of just plays into, I guess, how well a series is treating itself and how much how much it's going to force its audience to be able to go along with something and how much it's willing to say, I'm not, like, as a creator, I'm not winking at you at the same time this is happening. Like, no, take this completely seriously, you know?
Right. So, you know, like, sometimes it's actually easier to suspend your disbelief for something when there is, you know, like deliberate acknowledgement of the fourth wall or in jokes and stuff like that. If it all fits in with, you know, the general tone of the series and the general approach of it, because then it's like, okay, it's this, you know, it's just this kind of fun ride that we're on. I guess then it's like you are you don't have to suspend your disbelief at all to begin with.
Yeah.
So thus it's never broken.
Yeah, but I mean, well, you have that a little bit with like Deadpool, the movie, you know, it was constantly making fun of itself for things like that. But at the same time, it played with enough rules in its own universe that when dramatic stuff was happening, you know, it wasn't as though, Ryan, what's his name? Why am I'm blanking on his name. What's the
Reynolds.
Actress? Ryan Reynolds. That's it. I was kind of calling him Ryan Gosling and then Ryan Offerman, which isn't even a person. Ryan Reynolds' character, like when he was trapped in that tank, he didn't get out using a cartoon hammer like it was a Looney Tunes sketch or something like that. Like they still build the dramatic tension there, but at the same time, he could put all these jokes in like superhero landing or, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to have Ryan Reynolds' face. I'm going to make a joke about Ryan Reynolds being ugly or something like that, or, you know, deliberately make a joke about something not even in this movie's universe context sort of thing. It still works as long as you're writing it to that consistency.
Yeah. Okay. And second question, aside from best WMR created character and most what the fuck moment, how about an award for jokes or moments in the podcast nominated by the audience, like the aforementioned Revenant 2 or pretty much any time Chris brings out World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor?
Like I said, kind of when we got to that part in the award nominations, I don't think that's for us to decide. I think that's a little self-indulgent. So if our audience would like to create something like that, we'll be more than happy to acknowledge it in what ways, but That's I think for the audience to say, not us.
Yeah, like we really should not just introduce that word. Like, come on, guys, talk about how great we're. Nah, if you want to do that, go for it.
Yeah,
but no.
All right, next questions here is from Doomdog 619. Says, hi guys. Question, what are better or less shitty places to end manga, like ending Naruto where he beats Madara and so the demon Ghost Lady doesn't exist, or Bleach ending with them saving Rukia?
Ending it with Guy beating Madara would have been hilarious, I will say.
That would be pretty good.
I was like, oh wow, that worked. Okay.
Holy shit. Guy, you did it. Like, wow, holy shit. That eighth level and ninth gate, those were legit. I'm not gonna lie. I think we've mentioned before that I think we both kind of agree with the idea that if you're going to end Eye Shield, like ending it at either the Ojo match or if you had to, like, you want to finish that particular arc after the Hakusho match would have been much better than, at the very least, end it after the Teikoku match. Even though it was a disappointing end, it's much better than ending it with the World Cup arc, which really didn't add much of anything to the series.
I've heard some weird things from Bleach fans about where the series should have ended, or commenting on the goodness of certain things ending. So, like, for example, a couple years ago when I wrote that article that made them all hate me.
Yes.
A lot of people were like, no, you couldn't just end it after Aizen was defeated. There were too many unanswered questions. Which I don't know if we actually learned anything that was worth the 5 years.
I was like, aren't there still massive unanswered questions after the ending
there
as well?
Absolutely are. And so many of them are so pissed off about it. I know that, like, you know, for example, like, Tekking has done a number of videos about, like, so what the hell was the deal with this and this? And
what happened to Kira?
Basically.
Did anyone ever stop the chicken clones from killing everybody, or what happened?
What does this Bankai actually do? But also, a lot of people noted that the ending of the Bleach anime was kind of given a lot more sense of importance than the manga was, which was really just, you know, Ginjo got killed and Ichigo made a big deal of, like, taking his body back to Earth. It's like, that was it. But they made it seem like it was a big deal while it was happening in the anime, and so therefore it kind of felt more satisfying.
Oh man. I'm trying to think of other series we've read that have ended that I'd really put too much of like a stamp on having it end someplace else.
I feel like Toriko should have had maybe not ended somewhere different, but it certainly did seem to lose a lot of momentum towards the end.
Yeah, I don't know where you'd end it alternatively, because even ending it after the Neo stuff wasn't that great. Maybe if you were like of the idea that it you were going to leave a lot up in the air, but ended it after the four kings, like, fought the four, I can't remember, but it was those four different beasts that could join together to form one big monster. That was, like, kind of the last, that is kind of the best, I guess, conclusionary area to kind of leave things. Also, to our ruler of time, what are your favorite dog's fromantic Pokemon if you don't want to mute?
What the fuck does that mean?
What are your favorite dog's fromantic Pokemon if you have any you don't want to mute? I guess the idea being, if you were to have a dog, like a dog Pokemon, that way you wouldn't... Well, because you hate dogs. I think that's the idea.
I know,
you hate dogs. Is there a dog Pokemon you don't hate? That's what I'm grasping off this. Is there a dog Pokemon
There are individual friendly, quiet dogs that I have met, yes.
That are Pokemon? Because Pokemon is very clearly in here.
I've never met a Pokemon, Chris.
I don't know what fromantic is. Is that a word? Fromantic. When people act romantic toward one another on a day. All right, Nick, what dog Pokemon do you want to fuck? I guess is what this question is asking. I don't know what this question is exactly asking. Apologies to DoomDog619. We may be just be, missing the context here, but, I am enjoying it. So thank you very much.
I get the impression that English may not be your first language. So I'm sorry that we're not getting it.
No, but thank you very much for the question, DoomDog.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you may have inadvertently caused me to have to consider some things about myself that I really wasn't expecting to today.
Like, if I had to have sex with a dog, I'd want to go with a big breed.
I guess I have sex with a Pokemon dog.
I guess I definitely want to go with a legendary, because that's at least a big deal.
Oh, no. You gotta go for Mega Houndoom, man, with the bone armor.
The most dangerous one? The one that, like, there can't be a form of sex where it isn't hurting you?
The one that looks like it could not stay upright during. All right. This one comes from Now4. Dear Nick, how do you ever get anything done if all you ever do is argue with each other? And Chris, we don't! That's part of our charm! Quit fucking it up! It's Now4, and you would get that reference if you watch Red vs. Blue past season 5.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a reference to our dynamic, and I was like, we don't argue that much, do we?
Fuck you, Chris.
Oh. Yes, we do.
Question one, since we're on the subject of internet personalities, is famed Canadian interviewer Phelous in any way related to Canadian comedian Doug Benson? They both have really similar, read bizarre, and trollish sense of humor, and bear a distant resemblance to each other. I have no goddamn clue.
Well, I'm going to assume not, based on them not having the same last name, but I don't know. I do know Doug Benson. I have listened to him before. I have heard some of his podcasts. Phelous has now this is granted, I haven't been able to watch a lot of Phelous stuff recently. I always remembered Phelous having a very distinct cadence, and just the fact that their cadences weren't the same, that's what makes you think, like, no, there's nothing there. But this could be a giant conspiracy that you've just unraveled the start of. Very much, essentially, you've created your own Da Vinci Code, and I think you should be the one following the rest of the tracks on this.
Right, right. Phelous is related to Doug Benson, and Avril Lavigne is a clone. All right. Question two. There is a good chance you've gotten this question before by the time you get this email. Considering it's January now, I'm going to say, man, this is one hot summer, huh?
Hey, we haven't gotten to summer yet.
But it is hot because it's Florida and down here, so. But I'm going to ask it anyways. Have you seen the anime from My Hero Academia? And if you have, what do you think of the voice cast? It goes on to ask a question about the English voice cast, and I have not watched any of the dub for the show.
I
did watch a few episodes of the anime when it was subbed, and I did like it quite right.
I know... I have seen a couple episodes of the anime, and I know I watched at least one of the dubbed version. I was trying to find how to watch it, and eventually I just got, like, followed a link that was the dubbed version. I was like, ah, okay, I'll check this out. I recall the dubbed one actually being pretty good. It's tough for me. I don't know why, but, like, the main character of anime series is a thing that's, like, so hard to, like, not get right, but I feel like to find myself completely satisfied with the voice of a character. It's that thing, like, I know what Luffy is, I know who Luffy's like, but I just don't know what Luffy sounds like. And like, no matter how many, you know, versions I've heard of the dub versions of Luffy, every time I'm just like, nah, like the only one that works for me is the Japanese one. Just in like, just in like the inverse, I'm like, I know Goku, but the only Goku that's right is the American dubbed Goku.
Right. It's
like,
gotta be Sean, it's gotta be Sean Schimmel. And it's weird that he sounds the same that he did as a kid in Japan.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, it just, it, you know, it's crazy. But, I did hear Deku in the My Hero episode and he works. He sounds a little bit more of like a deeper voice than I'd kind of imagine him sounding. But, yeah, I thought he was pretty good in that role. Like it's a pretty heavy emotional kind of role. Like Deku really doesn't, you know, hide much of his feelings or bury the lead on things. So I thought, that individual did a great, performance. And I don't know who it was though. I didn't remember. It says it's a team 4-star associate in the next question. I didn't know who it was. I know I have been hearing Team 4-star members, and I'm sorry, I'm just jumping into question 2.2, or 2.5, but, I know I've heard Team 4-star members of different things, like I know, Lanny Pator did a couple voices in Smite when I was still playing that, and I know I've seen them across the board in various other things. We know Kerberfer, I don't think he's directly Team 4-star, but we know Kerberfer, we had him on the show, and he's mentioned, you know, how he's been voice acting in various different dubs. He just recently was in the dub of, Tales of Zestiria as, and he was also in the game, I'm sorry, too, as, I'm forgetting the name of the character. I want to count him Hyde, but I don't think it's Hyde. But, no, I think it's supremely awesome that those guys are gaining, you know, legitimate roles in the industry. I think it's the appropriate thing for them. Those guys have all been extremely talented and been putting a lot of work in.
Okay, is it done, like, glitching out on me?
Is it?
Is it done?
I hope so.
It's been going pretty badly.
Okay. Well, it should hopefully be all right on my end, I hope, but, I'll let you know if anything changes. So I went through question 2.5.
Yeah, Justin Briner, by the way, is the name of the guy.
Justin
and,
Briner.
He's, been on, Mission Abridged. So I don't think he's actually been, I don't think that he was actually in DBZ Abridged, but he's been in their Final Fantasy. Dub.
Okay.
Right.
It's weird.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty much on the same page as you in terms of the Team 4-star general question, which the question is, what are your thoughts on how internet personalities like, he and other members of Team 4-star starting to invite an actual anime voice acting? It's great because, you know, they're talented guys, they're passionate guys, and it's great to see that, you know, they can do what they love and, you know, be able to live a little bit easier because of it.
What was the name of the individual who was, Deku?
Justin Briner. B-R-I-N-E-R.
Okay. Cause, it is amusing to me. I typed in Team 4-star members and the first link that I get offered is, from the channel Awesome Wikia. Which I'm just like, I guess technically, I mean, that was a long time ago, but okay.
Alright. Oh, God.
Question 3.
Oh, here's. Yeah, well, you can ask question 3 because my freaking everything's going slow.
Gotcha. You said that given the choice between living in the Pokemon world, the digital world, you'd pick the Pokemon world. But which type of creature would you want living with you in the real world, either as a pet or a roommate? So you're asking like,
well, Digimon have proven that they poop everywhere.
Oh, okay. So it's asking which one of the two we'd want if we had to like live alongside them. I mean.
You're right. Just have one of them living with you in your current life.
I mean, I think Pokemon, just cause they're like, I don't know if it's, I feel like I'm going to like get myself into trouble by saying this, but they're like basically pets, right? Like they basically are. They have
they do establish in the Pokemon world, a lot of people just keep them as pets. So.
Yeah. Like they have a level of sentience a little bit higher than, you know, a pet. Like, you know, a Pokemon can express emotions or things a bit better than, like, Scotia can or something like that. But like a Digimon, I'm like, it's just a roommate. Like they eat so much. They're so annoying and shit. Like I'm gonna have to worry like
they shit everywhere.
Yeah, like I'm just like it's like I have I'm gonna have to start working on finance things with this. I'm like, look, Gabumon, I love you, buddy, but like come on.
I have to put you on my tax returns now. You're a dependent.
Yeah, this is come on. You have your own room in the house. You sleep in my bed. It's annoying. All right, dude. Like
you
keep plugging the toilet.
Well, you know that there's species that work here.
Yeah, I get that. I don't care what you have to do, but make me my money. If you have to become a sex phone operator, Agumon, that's fine with me. I don't care. I need my rent.
What am I wearing? Nothing. I'm a dinosaur.
I'm a dinosaur. Pepper breath. Oh, blew up the phone again. God damn it!
Oh, you're into that? Describe myself. Well, I've got yellow scales and claws and, what, you're done already? Oh, okay. Alright, bye.
That was great! Sex phones are fun! All right. Question four.
I think I'm good to go now.
Go for it.
All right. Question four. I think it's pointless to ask which is worse, or which one you dislike the most at this point, but between Black Clover and Fairy Tail, which manga do you find more frustrating to read each week and why? This actually depends on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. Black Clover more genuinely, because I actually have hope for it. So I can be disappointed and thus, you know, able to be like, oh, come on, why isn't it, you know, better this way? But Fairy Tail is more consistent because every single chapter I can pretty much find something that's like, okay, you know, this could be so easily just be better if you just did this. But at the same time, I don't really care, so it's not really that frustrating.
See, I have that to a similar extent, but actually in the inverse. I get more bothered by Fairy Tail because I've seen what Black Clover is from the start, and I've never been on board with it. But I was on board with early Fairy Tail. I feel like there was a level of talent in writing it, and definitely a level of storytelling that could be present in it, but just got abandoned for more cheap, kind of easy answers and things like that. So I find Fairy Tail more frustrating because when it does bad things, I know there's a good writer behind it, and I know that it's not just me not getting it. With Black Clover, a lot of the time, I recognize it's a, you know, very popular series. People enjoy it, but I've never enjoyed it for the same reason that I think the majority do. Whereas Fairy Tail, I know that I was on board with the same way everyone else was just at the start.
Okay. Interesting. All right, question five. As of the writing of this email, you two have watched the first half of volume one of Ruby. So by the time you read this, you should have watched through volume six.
Yeah, all told.
Yeah, that's totally how that works. Yeah.
Oh, no.
In my opinion, the second best element of the show, right after its animation, is its music. The songs can be majestically melodramatic, exponentially epic, and or awesomely dorky. Do you have any particular favorite or standouts that you really like?
I mean, I feel bad. I'm hoping this individual got the bonus
pod.
Wasn't
one of the big things that you said during
I hated the music. I
just hate the music.
I'm like, I have a regular chat of people I talk to, and in it are several people who legitimately just love the Ruby. I couldn't remember the name of it. And I remember asking them, I was like, what do you guys like about it? And one of them kept bringing up the music. I was like, can you give me examples of any music? Every single time they linked something, I was like, this is pretty awful. I can't stand this. I get like awesomely dorky music. Like I have the Phoenix Wright theme song on my MP3 player at one point in time. You know, I wait, some of my alarms are set to WWE theme songs. You know, I'd see Crush 40 in concert if I could. I get like dorky music and embracing it. But the music in Ruby, I just, none of the tracks I heard got me into it. I don't know what it is, but it's not for me at all. So, I'll plead the fifth as much as I can on this question. As not
if,
to offend.
If you like
offend.
The music in Ruby, more power to you.
Yes.
But you were asking the wrong people that question. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Questions here from Campy. And he says, Happy St. Patty's Day, Nick. Nick, Relief Rum Toy, and Chris Toll R. Firstly, Chris.
Anagrams of our names, which
yes.
is cool.
Yes. He says, Chris, your name doesn't have too many letters in it, so coming up with an anagram was difficult. Not in love words I can make with only T, O, L, and R. Questions here. As we know, shonen manga is no stranger to having over-the-top action. However, a good shonen manga, like any good action-oriented media, will still retain compelling characters and an interesting story in addition to great action. However, some series, such as Ruby or One Punch Man, seem to be using their series as a vehicle for lavish action scenes without establishing compelling characters or story, as if they were expensive Hollywood blockbusters. What is your opinion on series that are mostly vehicles for action? If the action is well done, are you willing to give it a pass even if the characters or story are uninteresting, but the action or animations are top-notch?
I guess it depends on what you're going for, honestly.
Generally, no, but it sort of depends. Like, for example, you know, we kind of mentioned, like, one of the things with Ruby is I got desensitized to it after a while. Like, I could appreciate it as, like, holy crap, this is amazing, but, you know, that was the same feeling I felt when I watched Haloid or Dead Fantasy or one of the other things Monty used to work on. But having that in a, you know, series that goes on for 10 episodes or whatever, it starts to lose that a little bit after a while, and I need something to fall back on. I don't know as to, like, thinking One Punch Man is that way, as I never really watched the anime. When reading the manga, for me, it was always the humor. Like, I kind of take that in a different scope just because One Punch Man is different in my mind. Like, it's a comedy. I'm not meant to take it as seriously as I would, like, a Ruby or something like that. But in general, I'm fine with having a lot of really good action to it, even, like, if it comes at the expense of maybe, like, some storytelling elements, like, you don't take that as seriously because it's more about the action. I get that, and I'm fine with that, but there still needs to be something there, because eventually, action's great and all, but eventually, it does wear out. Like, if the next three Doctor Strange movies are all that same kind of fight scene done over and over again, they don't expand upon the character at all, I'm not gonna care then. I'm like, this worked for one movie, but you gotta do something different later on. You know, it just has to kind of put some meat in there eventually.
Yeah. And those two series you name are very different, because, yeah, they both have ridiculous over-the-top action scenes, I'll grant you that. But Ruby, you know, in between that, there is, you know, a long ongoing plot with, you know, mysterious bad guy villain stuff, and there's high school life kind of stuff. Whereas One Punch Man is more than half parody of just general shonen action and superhero stories. Mm-hmm. They both are going for very different kinds of feels. And so I do agree that, yeah, One Punch Man doesn't exactly have the most compelling characters. They're not especially deep. That's because they're meant to be parodies of a lot of different characters. A lot of characters introduced that are supposed to be jokes. So just having that one similarity in the, you can't just, they're not equivalent is my point.
Yeah.
And I do agree that you have a point in, hey, there are these things that definitely emphasize action too much. You were correct. But that's a great example that it really does depend on the type of feeling that you're trying to create. And even, when, you know, cause Chris, you mentioned on Hume's previous works before Ruby, you know, the stuff with like Halo and Dead Fantasy is like, well, the entire point of those was that it was this ridiculous over the top action scene all the way through. So it worked just fine because that was all that you really needed to expect from it. If you wanted to then say, oh, but I want you to have a deeper connection to these characters, then yes, a pure action scene is not going to cut it. And you do need to put work into the other stuff besides that. Or if you want you to be able to laugh at stuff, you've got to have some good jokes in there. Whatever reaction you want from your audience, you have to work towards that.
I feel like, and to give an example, I think I would have enjoyed Iron Fist a significant amount more had it been more about, like, goofy action. Like, there's that one episode he goes through a series of, like, weird martial art fights with, like, random, like, assassins. I was like, if these were better...
They did a Tower of Death and none of the fights were good.
Yeah, I was like, if these were better and the series were more about this, I think you could have the rest of the plot be fine. Because I don't... Like, that's kind of what I'm, like, setting myself up for when I go into this. Like, oh, it's a martial arts series. I'm really looking for, like, cool action. And hey, like, if there's a plot... As long as the plot doesn't suck, then I'm fine. So, like, if it was, like, boring the rest of it, but if the fights were great, it'd probably be fine in my book. So that's, like, sort of an idea you could go along with, too, is, like, just... whatever you're setting the self up for, play to that.
I feel like the only fight that I really liked from that series was the Drunken Master part.
The Drunken Master fight was probably the only really good one in there, yeah. Question two, have you seen One Piece film Gold? If so, what are your opinions on it? And if not, would you be willing to watch it for a bonus podcast commentary when it is released? No, I don't think either of us have seen it.
But And yes to the latter.
Yeah,
sure.
I think definitely. Three, speaking on movies based on an anime series, do you have a favorite and least favorite? and why do those two stick out in your mind?
I'm not sure about a least favorite, but probably my favorite is Pokemon 3.
That's the one with Entei and the Unknown, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Great movie.
I think, honestly, my favorite might have been the One Piece Dragon Ball Z Toriko crossover, if only because it was exactly what I kind of hoped for out of it. Like, it was stupid action, but it was just a chance to see those three characters, like, fighting together and acting together, interacting. Like, it set up the plot just the right way. Like, first they have to fight, then they all have to get together. Like, it was just a pure exemplifying amount of shonen. Like, it was just like, here it is. This is exactly what this genre is about. And I was like, that's very cool. I don't know if I have, like, a least favorite. I guess it would be, like, one just boring. Maybe, like, the One Piece Baron Amatsuri Island, but I've had so much fun talking about it that it kind of, like, gets lifted up in my mind. Nick, are you playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Links on mobile? This question came back in January, so I think we've kind of talked about this before. You were not a fan of it because it was pretty boring and not a lot of cards.
I actually have
uninstalled it from my phone too since then. Yeah. I still enjoyed it, but it was just one of those things. And I do this frequently when it comes to mobile games. I uninstall them after a while, usually just because I get kind of bored of them and I want to try something else. Like, it's that point when playing a mobile game almost becomes like a second job. Like, I'm constantly, God, I gotta grind all my Bakura battles so I can get all the sweet cards from him. And it's just like, I got things to do in life.
The game is, too dumbed down. Not enough cards are included. You can't, actually do enough strategies. Uh-huh. So.
Question 5, the penultimate question. This time, I decided to give you two goobery questions to sink your teeth into. Game Freak, after hearing your lavish love of the Pokemon Adventure manga, decides to come to you for ideas. They want to make a new villain team based on the next game, but have found they have writer's block. As such, they want you, using the villains found in different series you are currently viewing as team bosses, to create sample villain teams. What are their goals, and what is the signature Pokemon of each boss?
Okay, so... I didn't do all of this.
Okay.
Shigaraki still wants to kill All Might. Xerath still wants to go back in time, but he is trying to do so by capturing Celebi. He basically wants to do the Mask of Ice thing.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Azami wants everyone to not go on Pokemon journeys, to just attend his special Pokemon Academy, where they all learn to battle and train Pokemon the exact same way.
Oh, okay. Okay.
What
would be his Pokemon?
A lot of super efficient training stuff, you know, like IV training would be involved.
Oh, so he's like, you just had to build the top tier fucking uber teams. Mm-hmm. So he's all of you have to have Primal Rayquaza.
But his signature Pokemon would actually be Smeargle, because Smeargle does nothing but copy someone else.
Okay. Okay.
Tsukasa would still want to, you know, create a new world order. His signature Pokemon would be Tyranitar, because, stone, raging monster thing. Okay. The angry former tuner in We Never Learn. That's the only villain I could think of in that manga. I don't know what the fuck she's trying to do with Pokemon, but she's got an Alakazam.
Okay.
Because its IQ is 3,000 or what the fuck ever.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Isabella is trying to raise Slowpoke Tails.
Okay.
Her signature Pokemon is a Kangaskhan, because it's a mother that fights with its child.
Oh, that is true. That's good. That's good.
I have no fucking clue what to do with the Ten Commandments.
They want to be religious nutheads or something like that. I'm sure you could do something like that.
Leash would be... I don't think you would need to change a single goddamn thing from one of the recent Pokemon gang things, because he's got really bizarre hypocritical vengeance thing going on in his head that doesn't make any sense if you think about it logically, therefore he's full of shit. And he uses fairies, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
Then there's Teach, who essentially wants to, be a Pokemon master, but he's a bastard about it.
Yeah, so you make, Paul
he's just going out, Right, he's just going on his Pokemon journey, but he's a real asshole about it.
Yeah. What would be his Pokemon?
Of course he would have a... I don't know what in particular he would use. I couldn't think of any specifics, but he would have a signature Dark and he would have a signature Ground.
Trying to think like a good...
He's going on his Pokemon journey. That's why he's got his gang, is that they actually help him to win by, you know, wearing down people around him instead of, you know, just having his wits and guts about him.
What would be like a great... You could do Absol, because he is also, like, it's meant to warn about impending disasters like earthquakes, so could kind of fit for that.
And Absol's a badass-looking Pokemon anyway.
Yeah, could fit that in. If not that, then maybe, like, Hydreigon, just like a dark dragon, just big and imposing.
Sure.
All right. Next question here. Secondly, the female protagonist of each series.
I can't believe I actually came up with an answer for this one.
The female protagonist in each of the series of the recap need to compete for a grand cash prize. How will they compete? Keijo, of course. What are their strategies to win, and who takes home the gold?
Oh my god. Okay. So. All right, so Diane would just lose automatically because she's too big to fit on the platform.
Okay.
Any of the girls that don't have any special powers, I think you can would just say it's like, well, they would have no way of winning. So, like, Arena, Yuzuriha, Iruka, because it's got to be Iruka from We Never Learned because, you know, swimming. Emma, none of them would stand a chance. Nami would try to use her climb attack, but I don't think that she would be allowed to do so. Noelle would also be equally helpless because she wouldn't be allowed to use her wand. So that leaves you with Lucy, whom I don't think can use anything without her magic keys. And anyway, Uraraka would just win anyway because she would just float above the water every time she got knocked off the platform.
That is true. That is true. But let's say, Nick, based solely on the idea of it's their bountiful bosoms
Well, if that were the case, then Diane would win because she is automatically the biggest.
Yeah, that is true. She does have a gigantic ass. So, and that's,
Her tits are bigger, are like individually bigger than some of the girls.
That's just based entirely off of sexist.
That is literal, just like.
Yeah, but like just, proportions wise, she's a giant. So she's several stories tall. So she has bigger butts than everyone else. So that's.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Campy, for those questions, and sorry we missed St. Patty's Day.
I don't know about thanking them, but okay. Still. Anyway. Next one comes from Jack Lebrano. Load the email. Okay. Dear Nick and Chris, first off, I wanted to thank you for lifting my spirits. You are welcome, dude. Anything that we can do to help you out. You've been going through some tough times lately. Question one. In one of the latest volumes of My Hero Academia, Horikoshi reveals in Inko's character sheet that her husband simply works abroad. And I can't help but notice that when a dad in anime/manga works abroad, that means they'll never be a part of the series and might as well be dead, much like Jotaro's dad who never showed up in Stardust Crusaders because he was apparently too busy being a jazz musician to come tend to his dying wife. That's a good point. However, seeing as how Horikoshi tends to bug many shonen trends into the series, do you think he's going to have Deku's dad be a part of the story at a future date, or do you think he's not going to bother?
I think
it's an interesting question.
It is, definitely. And this is all, presumption on our part. I don't have any real clues to this. I feel like this is a story hook, though, that ultimately, if it were to come in, it would come in like during the late stages of the story. If the series is something that runs for a decade plus or something like that, it's an intriguing element you could add into the story to kick it up. But as it is now, I think it actually would almost take away from the story a little bit if his dad showed up and became a thing. Because part of what I love about My Hero is Deku seems to have, I know she isn't single, but every representation of her we've seen of Deku's mom has been a single mother. You know, I saw recently Mother's Day happened and somebody posted images of different mothers from manga. They showed the one image of Deku's mom when she was younger and Deku was a young kid. Now she was pretending hero with him and she's like, oh, save me, save me. And he comes like, I'll save you. And I'm like, oh, right. Deku's mom was super awesome and things like that. And, you know, a large part of the series is how Deku's entry into heroism is slowly destroying himself, and the biggest consequence of that is seeing how much his mom worries. So I think it would almost kind of detract away from the story a little bit more to be like, oh, and he has a dad who hasn't been the story at all, hasn't had these same emotions had to be expressed, hasn't had to really be a part of anything, but hey, he's now a character now. It's just like, eh, I feel like maybe you play into Deku's issues with his dad long down the line when you're looking for something to add into his character. But right now, he's just not necessary.
After All Might's dead or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Question two. I've been thinking of getting my girlfriend the weekly manga recap. I showed her your commentary of Ibitsu and your whole rant on Reed Richards making a program to not have pedophiles talk to children online because it was too dangerous for humanity. You liked both of them, but I'm wondering, what are some of your favorite episodes of Weekly Manga Recap that you would recommend to people who are interested in either manga or just your banter? Honestly, I am sometimes shocked by some of the stuff that people get super into from the show.
There are definitely
so
those.
I don't know if there were actually any. I don't know if our recommendation means as much as your guys.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's tough too. It's like if they're into manga, I would say give them an episode that they enjoy for a manga, like a series that they either like and would like to hear someone talk about, or something that they would be interested in hearing opinion on. So, like, if they were into horror, you'd be like, yeah, Bitsu would be a great one or something like that. But if you're looking for just something to be like, oh, here's their style. Like, if I were to say right now, like, okay, Mark Cuban, because you're interested in starting up our manga cafe where we're regular hosts, here's a quick sizzle reel of our moments, I'd be like, I don't know, maybe we'd put something like the Revenant 2 discussion we had in there, or that story at the one episode about Gay Street. As the password for my cable login, something like that. Like, those are funny moments, I think, of the series that are general enough that anyone can kind of get into.
Sat on for like 3 months or something.
Oh,
like
year.
That.
It was years. It was years that he sat on that one. But like, just that notion of like a general kind of moment of our humor, I guess. That isn't attached to manga. But otherwise, I don't know. I'm not the best thought for that, because I forget so much what happens in this podcast.
I think that if you're looking for a general appeal, then you're going to want to recommend that they check out one where we check out a manga that is ridiculous or that we absolutely hate, because anger and pain are things that people like to look at online.
If I would actually give any recommendation to, I would say show them one of the episodes that Infamous Planet made a visual edition out of. Because those tend to be, like, as much as I love podcasts, I can understand when listening to a podcast for the first time, especially when someone's trying to recommend to you, it can be a little bit boring, if you're just staring at nothing, essentially. So something that, like, he created that gives you a visual element too, so if they don't know what the manga is or whatever it is, they at least have something to look at and reference to kind of understand what we're talking about. I think that's usually a good place to start.
Yeah. Also, if you do that, then you'll realize that when I'm ranting about Spider-Man, I accidentally call out Kazuchika Okada, the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, instead of the actual author of the manga.
Like, I get angry at Jared.
I need to find a bunch of pictures of Okada where he's looking disapprovingly.
It'd be like one day I'm just like, I'm getting angry at Hero, but instead I'm just like, God damn you, Randy Orton, write Fairy Tale better. I know you can.
If you want to get angry at Randy Orton, then yeah.
Dot, 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 dives. Yeah.
Question three, can I borrow $10?
Absolutely. You get to my place, I'll give you $10.
Yeah.
You just got to pay me back.
All right.
All right, questions here from Kenny Varnes. Dear Chris, Heroes is better than Lost because it actually bothers to explain robot chickens where it's not mine, Larios. And Nick, Korra got better after season 2. Trust me, you missed out on chibi kawaii little girl Korra Freeman.
I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Sure, Heroes was. I know. All right. Questions. How many Yu-Gi-Oh?
I remember when they tried to bring Heroes back.
Yeah, I did, and heard nothing about it after that. Although I did, one thing I always kind of got sad about is there were JoJo references in Heroes that I never realized. I guess, the time stopping guy used to make Yeah, he made those jokes at one point. Question one. How many Yu-Gi-Oh video games have you played and what are your favorites? I'm going to go on a hunch and say Forbidden Memories and Duelist of the Roses for our full 3D models and attacks.
I've actually not played either of those games. I have played, well, just a fucking Duel Links. I've played, a fair number of the, DS and Game Boy Advance games. And, they did seem to definitely be getting into a good, rhythm.
Yeah.
Like, especially when they were like doing the 5Ds ones, the first 5Ds game is Berk. But they were gradually tweaking it each year after that, and by the time that 5Ds was over, they pretty much had perfected what to do, because they took out all the stupid sneak missions and box puzzles, and they made the D-Wheel segments actually fun and playable. So.
See, that used to be my thing in the day, was the regular World Championship games on the Game Boy Advance and I think the DS. I eventually stopped playing them. I feel like I stopped playing them before it went to the DS, but I remember playing a lot of those, and that was like my jam, because it was almost like Madden. Like, every year a new one would come out, have more cards in it, and those were like really, really fun. And looking back on it, like, there's a games where you basically just grind against computer opponents over and over again. I had built my stupid deck that wasn't even like the top tier deck, but it just had all the awesome cards. I love it. Like, I'm like, it's a deck with Jinzo and Gearfried the Iron Knight and all the Magnet Warrior cards, because I just like these. And fuck you, I have Mirror Force and Regeki and all the broken shit in it. But the one I think I actually would look back and say I probably enjoyed the most was actually one of those weirder games, which was Yu-Gi-Oh! The Falsebound Kingdom. And this was a Yu-Gi-Oh! Game, but not a card game. It was actually a real-time strategy / turn-based RPG game. It was basically kind of an expansion upon that idea of that one episode where the Yu-Gi-Oh! Characters kind of get trapped in like a medieval fantasy game.
Right.
The idea is like you play each duelist.
Kaiba, why did you make the princess look like your little brother?
Yeah, I don't think it was that. I don't think Mokuba was a princess, but it was the idea that you could. All your character, like each duelist you had, like, was their own group, and they'd have three monsters within their group, and you could change the monsters in and out, and you would send them across, you know, the battlefield in different ways. But if they encountered an enemy duelist, then you had to battle one another in like a turn-based RPG to basically knock out the other team. And it was, you know, kind of it was a fun game, even though it was very weird. I'm sure if I look back now, like, I feel like if you weren't a Yu-Gi-Oh fan, you'd be like, this is annoying as shit. Because it was pretty repetitive, but I remember it being a pretty fun game, like collecting new monsters and like getting new stuff and you know, just like building up to this end. It was a fun game, especially for something a little bit different. All right. Question two. Having recently listened to your Future Diary review, what are some actually good portrayals of Yandere characters / couples that you could think of?
I think if a Yandere character is played just for laughs, then it could definitely work. But any that, takes that kind of character and then has them end up in just like a quote unquote healthy romantic relationship is like, that's what you're getting yourself into with that.
Yeah. So I don't know any, because I don't really know that many great examples of Yandere. And, I guess it's one of those things I just haven't put much thought into. So unfortunately I can't add too much to that. Question three. This is going to be an interesting one. Do you believe that certain subject matter, no matter how repulsive it is, can be executed quite well in the hands of a capable writer? And if so, what are some examples of characters or stories that are involved in taboo relationships that you could think of that are done in a mature and tasteful manner? I think the thing I want to clarify right now is there is a difference between the idea of like taboo relationships, because in this example, the individual references like pedophilia and incest. And you're saying it's done in a mature and tasteful manner. There's a difference in having it portrayed in a story and being okay with it, and the idea of doing it in a story and trying to make me as a reader feel like it's not weird or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
There's no case in the latter where I'm going to be able to look at a story of pedophilia and be like, oh, okay. There's the idea that you could put a character in a story who is a pedophile and write them in such a way that I'm okay with it, because it creates an interesting story in and of its, like, into where it is. Like, you know, and this is, again, this is a touchy topic. Trigger warning, I don't know if it needs to be put at, but there's plenty of situations of characters who are very awful in the Song of Ice and Fire series. You know, there are no shortage of characters who do awful things to many people, plenty to women. And it's still something that is interesting to read at times, if only because it's the world in which it's being portrayed. The fact that these are happening is just essentially a way of showing what kind of world this is. And that's fine, because it creates an interesting story to read then. Can it be done for anything out there? I would say theoretically maybe, but I can't say I've ever read a story that had, you know, there's elements of pedophilia, I think, in the Song of Ice and Fire. Like, certain characters, they hint, might be pedophiles or things like that. So, you know, it kind of functions to that, but any idea of trying to make those into something that I wouldn't consider taboo afterwards, that they don't exist. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
I think that incest there might be a little bit more of a... I did a video a few years ago on a series called Marmalade Boy. Pretty teenagers by the time that their families together around each other. There was no blood relation between them. Love because they're while they were already... So as a result, being incestuous relationship, and that's the least awful part of it.
All right. Yeah, connection's a little off there, so we'll move on to the next one there. But it's an interesting question. Question four: you guys have mentioned To Love Rue on the show a few times. Do you think its sequel series, To Love Rue Darkness, and its brilliant use of secretly hiding uncensored vaginas into several of its pages as a big fuck you to Japan's censorship laws? Case in point, this infamous page that I have attached to this email, which I'm not going to show to the chat, but if you click on it, it's a girl whose hair is covering her vagina in one shot, but you can see a character who is looking up at her, and if you look closely into his pupil, you can see that her vagina is reflected in that. I will say this.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm not versed enough in Japan's censorship laws. I don't have enough of a familiar attachment to it to really care one way or the other. I can't say if it's like, it's a little weird that you're like sneaking these in there, or if I'm like, good for you that censorship laws are too oppressive. I just don't have enough of a knowledge of the situation to really care either way.
I really do not care. Oh, look at you. You snuck in that upskirt shots and whatever. Fucking cares.
And finally, Nick, our last question here is, if you were discussing the Krabby Patty secret formula of Mr. Krabs on the third Wednesday in January when it's raining outside, after we gargle a river of pudding, what do we do?
How can it be raining outside if we're talking with Mr. Krabs? That means we're underwater.
Is this the actual... is that the answer to it in the show? I forget what it is. It's been too long since I've watched like full episodes of SpongeBob.
I don't know, actually.
Yeah, I don't remember what the actual answer to that was, unfortunately. The most, like, SpongeBob response that's coming to me right now.
Hang on a second. That's an easy one. You just, let's see. It's, if it's January with vanilla pudding, you, pass?
That's right. Pass. Oh, God. I love SpongeBob. I really need to go back and catch up on that show. All right. Thank you for the questions, Kenny.
All right. I found out what's causing my connection to get screwed up is whenever fucking banner ads come up on mail.yahoo.com. All right. Flockhead. I'm not going to do this. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. You want me to? Yayo, Freeman, don't give it up. Why, Rod Freeman, don't give it up. Rollo Freeman, don't give it up. Your manga, Freeman, don't give it. Leverios. Ah, oh, that's not the rest
that,
of the
that
song.
That is
though.
Really good, but there was no way I was doing that. I'm also not going to do the whole Old Spice thing, although that is good as well.
I feel like I shouldn't have done it because now my throat's starting to hurt, but it was worth it.
Well, there you go. Question one, short and simple. If you two somehow ended up in a heated fist fight against one another for whatever reason, how would it go and who do you think would win? Bonus points if you throw in a fatality. I think all things being the same, Chris would probably kick my ass if only because he is larger and fitter than me.
Yeah, I guess the idea is just being if we were to get into an exact fight, I don't think either of us have any recent martial arts training or any kind of fight experience.
No.
We're both about the same height, so it's really just the fact I have more weight on him that would go into it. But I think it could go either. I feel like
you've got a couple of inches on me, dude. So.
Do I? I thought we were about the same height. Okay.
I'm 5'10". So.
Okay. So there is that, but I think ultimately it's not like, you know, it's not like John Jones going up against like a featherweight. I feel like it's one of those things that if Nick were to land a good shot early on, I'd probably go out pretty quickly. So I guess it could go either way. I'm just saying, I think you could place your bets either way.
Who was it? I think there's a story of like Joey Styles cold cocking JBL one time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. There's definitely stories of, smaller guys getting bigger guys down. It's basically just if like, you know, there's the whole story of Jericho beating up Goldberg, and Goldberg, you'd probably always look at and be like, well, that guy's more.
I grabbed a headlock. That was the only wrestling move I knew.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like if you catch the person the right way, you can knock them out. So I would say it's a more up in the air fight than maybe we can say. Hopefully we never have to find an answer to that.
All right. Question B. Since it's summer, if it's not actually summer, well, Nick lives in Florida, so the scene still fits. I'd like to ask you which manga series, not just Shonen Jump, do you think would be able to pull off the best / most entertaining beach party episode? General entertainment and fan service are important factors, but who cares about story? It's a beach party. Barbecue and BYOB is all you need.
I don't know if it ever did one, but I feel like Food Wars would be a great series for it. Because you could easily do the fan service stuff, but part of what absolutely. I think you enjoy about like beach parties and things like that, like one things I always think of is like cookouts. And what series better to like really get you excited about a cook-off than a cooking manga that does it so well and usually uses it for fan service, you know? So I feel like that's one that could do a great episode on it.
I was thinking just One Piece, just because, you know, they tend to do good parties anyway. So.
Yeah, I could definitely see it.
Alright. Question Gamma. So, all of the Shonen Jump manga have ended, currently unemployed. What real-life profession do you think that they would be able to pick up in order to support themselves now that their supply of sweet, sweet Shonen Jump? Caveat. Soma is not allowed to work as a chef because that's too easy.
So all the Jump protagonists have no longer, like, the magazine's done. They need to find something to do with their life.
Right. Luffy, I've got answers for each
of them. Okay. All right. I'll let you go for this, Nick. You go.
All right. Deku, I feel like, would be a writer because he's got a creative mind. He might very well end up doing some sort of blogging thing because he's a tremendous nerd and has in-depth knowledge of a bunch of the different heroes. So he would, I think, actually work really well as like a nerd blogger of some sort.
Okay.
Soma, you can't work as a chef, but he would find some other way to help in a restaurant, either serving or, you know, just doing general stuff like around his dad's restaurant or something like that. Senku, we learned about in this week of, Dr. Stone, he wants to be an astronaut, so he would become a fucking astronaut. Yuiga would, be a tutor or teacher because, duh.
Obviously.
Emma would do something working with kids, either working at, like, an orphanage or, you know, as, like, a preschool teacher or something like that. Asta would enter an Arnold Schwarzenegger strongman competition. Look at his ridiculous body! Come on!
That is true.
And I can't imagine Luffy actually holding down a regular job so he'd become a vagrant.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? I could see that a lot. I could see him walking into places. Like, he'd just be that guy around town. Everyone's like, here comes Luffy. And he shows up, and he's like, yeah, put it on my tab. Eats a shit ton of food, walks around. But hey, when shit gets real, you know, like in an 80s movie, when some evil business corporation's coming to take over your restaurant so they can use that land to build a hotel, Luffy will show up and beat him up, or win a skiing contest, or whatever they need to do.
And just for a bonus, because you only asked about Shonen Jump manga, but I thought of this one early on anyway, Natsu would be a firefighter.
I think he might actually become a Magic the Gathering player so he can play with a bunch of dragon cards.
I come up with this whole thing like, oh, he'd be a firefighter. You know, that would be how he would eat. And, you know, he would get to save lives and be a great hero. No, I'm like, Magic the Gathering.
Nah, I'm like, it's too heroic for him. Fuck him. I don't want he plays Magic the Gathering cards because he likes dragons and shit.
And the, and a guy shows up everywhere he goes and just takes pictures posing with his ass crack.
Yeah. All right. Questions here again. Kenny Varnes. There's actually a few here, so I might blast through some of these. Dear Chris, did I really mention I like Plus Anima?
There's only about three of them that we actually have to answer.
Dear Chris, did I really mention I like Plus Anima a lot yet? Larios and Nick, Senria's Love, Senria's Life Freeman. Question one. I watch a lot of Kung Fu movies on the El Rey Network occasionally and have grown fond of some of the Shaw Brothers films. Have you ever watched any of the Shaw Brothers movies? If you can't answer it, then what are some of your favorite Kung Fu fix? On the off chance you don't answer the former, I recommend watching some of these, especially Holy Flame, a bona fide martial arts equivalent to a grade A popcorn flick.
I have not seen any Shaw Brothers stuff. I was really big into Jackie Chan films when I was a kid, and I still am to a lesser extent. I really like Iron Monkey as well.
Yeah, I haven't seen any Shaw Brothers stuff. I really never consider myself like a kung fu flick kind of guy. Like, I can enjoy it when it's on, but it was never anything like I didn't like set it as a genre to look out for as like I was growing up or anything like that. And now it's just not on my radar as much. So I did like a lot of the Jackie Chan movies I kind of saw. Anything where he gets to use like a ladder or an alleyway to beat up a bunch of people, it's pretty good. But outside of that, I can't think of too many examples I'd really go with. I remember not liking Kung Fu Hustle at all, if that answers anything you were looking for. I just remember being really annoying after a while. Like, I got really lost. And I don't know, maybe just because I wasn't stoned or, like, under the influence of anything at the time and everyone else I was with was. Maybe that's why.
Are you talking about Kung Fu Hustle or Kung Pao Into the Fist?
Maybe it's Kung Pao. It's the one, I feel like there's a chick with three breasts and there was, like, it took place entirely in, like, this square ghetto kind of thing.
Okay, and that is Kung Fu Hustle, I think.
Okay, I think so. Granted,
Kung Fu Hustle's the one with all the guys who have axes.
I think so. Did it have like a bunch of, did it have like two guys who fought with like that, Chinese, like, string music thing? Like they wore suits and they like put like a legs over and were playing instruments and fighting with it. Yeah, I didn't care for it. But also that was a really long time ago. I might enjoy it now. Anyways. Question two. My favorite game of all time is Darkstalkers. Darkstalkers 3, the final boss of the game, Gelda Doma, celebrates his victory in one of his win poses by laughing maniacally and clawing at his own motherfucking eyes. What are some of the examples of heroes/villains celebrating their victories in the most balls-out, messed-up manners?
Well, Braid, the fact that he was super strong by clawing at his own face and having it regenerate, and clawing at his own face and having it regenerate. So there is that, man.
Mm-hmm. I do enjoy a lot of, like, the Mortal Kombat ones. I do enjoy that a character in the recent game Instagrams her bloody victory over her opponent. I don't know why that amuses me so much. This isn't a fighting game, but I just want to note this because this is really funny to me. In all the Ace Attorney games recently, when you win a case, confetti fucking falls from the sky, and I just can't stop being amused by the idea of a world where when people are found not guilty, automatically confetti and balloons just fall from the sky and it's met with cheers. Like, you can imagine when it was just
can
like...
Can you imagine that happening in like The Wire or something like that? Like one of the gangsters gets up and like...
Yeah, they were just like, well, the jury must acquit O.J. Simpson. Yay! Yay! It's like confetti's literally falling from the sky. I just love that notion. All right. And finally here, question three, because the rest are really crazy. How fast do you like your music? Hardcore fast, gabber fast, French core fast, speed core fast, spitter core fast, or extra tone fast, which is basically all a different range of BPM. And to that, I don't honestly know because I haven't checked.
Yeah. I don't measure BPM when I listen to music, so I really could not tell you. I listen to a lot of power metal, if that gives you like an idea, but I really do not pay attention to that. I'm not a big audiophile or anything like that.
I actually probably should, like, gauge the BPMs of my music, because that would probably help me find more songs that fit for running. But, yeah, I don't honestly know, so maybe I'll check that out. But thank you for the questions, Kenny.
And, sorry for not answering the increasingly bizarre questions that you had after that, but judging by the note that you had afterwards, it seems as though you were deliberately doing it to see if we would even answer them, and I guess the question is no.
Yeah.
The answer is no.
Also, we're on time crunch, goddammit.
Yeah. Alright, more questions from Anouf4. Dear Wyro Ruler of Zawarodo is too easy, so and Rello.
Very nice.
Thank you. It is I, not for who you who has read both Ulysses and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and oddly, the latter makes more sense.
I have read both as well, and I remember Ulysses being, like, Ulysses was super cool to read in school, because you're like, oh, it's about fucking mythological shit, and, like, there's Medusas and, like, giants and shit, but it was also one of those things you're like, oh my god, there's so much history and nonsense in this, I'm so bored, when does this end? When do they get to a cool shit again?
I've always been surprised at how climactic Part 3's final battle is, despite the fact that none of the protagonists in it actually know of or have even met Dio up to that point. Despite this, the fight has just as much weight and tension as Jonathan's fight with him in Part 1, and the fight in Part 3 is so far removed from their relationship, Jotaro, by 5 generations. So my question is, why is the Part 3 fight with Dio so effective and climactic, even without any of the emotional connections established in Part 1? Is Dio just that good of a heel that you don't need a lot to love hating him? Is so much of his personality communicated by his actions that you get him really quickly? What is it that makes him feel so perfectly evil and climactic of a final villain?
I think that, first and foremost, we do actually have a connection between them, because even though Joseph and Jotaro haven't met him really to that point, they know that he's the cause of all this from the beginning. He's the one they've been going out to kill. So by a proxy of all these assassins he sent after, there is a connection there. However, the thing that I think is most important is that by the time Jotaro fights him, he's already killed about 3 of JoJo's friends. You know, it's not as though we're just meeting him for the first time. Even if this is the first JoJo you read, you would still have seen this guy for a while now, as he's basically run roughshod either himself or his direct lieutenants through the rest of Jotaro's gang. Like, you know, there's just that scene of him killing Kakyon and then going after Joseph. So when Jotaro finally gets to him, it is a moment of excitement because we know how strong Dio is and we want to see Jotaro overcome him. So it builds that. I feel like if they had met, you know, cold completely, so like we hadn't met Jotaro or Dio at all to that point, it probably wouldn't feel as significant, though there'd still be some inherent stuff there just because of the history.
And I also, I think that a lot of it has to do with the kind of style that goes into JoJo. You know, a lot of stuff is communicated very bluntly and viscerally, as opposed to subtly. So having stuff happen gradually may not really be its style. But yeah, to Chris's point, that's absolutely correct, is that Dio may not have shown up until the very end of the series, but his influence can certainly be felt all the way throughout it, because yeah, he's the cause of Jotaro's mother's condition, and has caused all what been pulling the strings the entire time,
and he's unrepentantly shitty about it too, so
yeah,
there's that. But I think that works for him. Thank you for the question, Noff. It was a good one to think about. Questions here from Loon Ranma Yasha. Hey, Time Roller of Y and Tolo R. Why do I write your names backwards? Because Trump is president. The whole world is topsy-turvy now. That's why. Anyway, Q&As. Question 1. At the time I'm writing this, the chapter where Crone died just came out. It was thoroughly shocking, and despite her being such a slimy villain before, I felt kind of sad about her death. Are there any characters in mangas whose deaths you were shocked upon reading the first time, and were there any characters whose deaths you found much sadder than you might have expected?
I have really been thinking about this question since I first read it, and I have not come up with a good answer for it, honestly. There are certainly some deaths that did shock me when they happened. I mean, honestly, too many to count. But in terms of one where I got a lot sadder about it than I expected, at the very least, when faced with the prospect of a character dying, I would at least get antsy about it. And so then if they actually died, it would be like, oh, well, now I'm sad that it actually happened. And so I wasn't really, shocked by how sad I was, because I was already worrying about it.
I try to think of like a really good example for this one, but I'm not getting too many that immediately come to mind. There are really good deaths out there, and I think it's easier for me to kind of remember the ones that have happened recently, And though it isn't a death, just that exposure of Isabella kind of, I think to what you're asking when it comes to Crone, like the idea of like, she was so slimy before, but I felt really sad about it. It's because you get a lot more context for her right before she dies. And when you've only known her as a villain beforehand, and all of a sudden you're exposed to her humanity, you have a connection to her. And that's kind of the thing that we just got with Isabella. We suddenly have realized there's a human behind all of this. It's not just this imposing force of resist, you know, stop resisting, submit, and accept your fate and be happy. You know, when you find that there's someone behind us who kind of, what built that character up to that point, you're able to relate to them a lot more. If you're just saying, though, what character deaths out of nowhere kind of shocked me, I mean, there are quite a few. I always kind of thought it was surprising when Jiraiya died the way he did. Like, it felt like that was a character could have hung around a lot longer, but they kind of, you know, he died so they could build up pain and, you know, move Naruto's character forward. But it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, wow, holy shit, he's dead as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Question two, also coming soon as the time of brightness, is the universe survival arc of Dragon Ball Super. Well, you know, you might be like, wow, this is crazy, Nick. They haven't even gotten to the actual tournament yet.
I know. It's not that crazy.
It's the fight where the strongest fighters of all 13 universes that exist in the DBU's universe will compete. Universe 7, entering 10 combatants, Goku, Vegeta, Gohan, Piccolo, Krillin, Tenshinhan, Master Roshi, Majin Buu, Android 17, Android 18. Side note, this isn't in the email, this is me as Christopher talking. I don't understand why Master Roshi's on this team. I get he was strong, but hasn't he spent like the last 5 years of his life fucking doing nothing but watching softcore porn? Like, it's like he did anything in Dragon Ball Z.
Find it hilarious.
Like, I get that
Master Roshi's included and Yamcha's not.
Like, I get that Goku's the one who gets to pick this team. Also, side note here, this is going to be almost be a diatribe about DBZ for a little bit. I was asking people around, apparently your universe is hell is considered legal, so there's like talk that like Frieza might join the team, and I was like, this is insane. So wait, in all the realities of the entire universe and all the people who have died throughout time, whose souls still exist in their hell, still Master Roshi fucking somehow, like, 900-year-old Master Roshi's on this team? I don't get it! Anyway, so, to Lone Rama Yasha's question is, if you were to substitute everyone except Goku with characters from the Shonen Jump series, excluding their main character, who would you choose? Alright, so let's go easy one. Zoro.
Aizen, All for One.
Oh, we're just going to most broken?
Yeah, why not?
Well, I'm trying to think, because the thing in actual Dragon Ball is Goku's actually going out and recruiting these people. So I'm trying to think who would Goku take from each series. And I feel like it would be like Zoro would be an easy one to kind of go with. I don't know who he'd take. Like Yami, I guess, if that counts for Black Clover. I feel like it's cheating more to take Yami than it is to take Asta.
It really is.
I guess it's how the rules kind of work.
Sasuke.
I'd probably take Diane from Seven Deadly Sins. Just that idea of, like, she's big and strong, and Bond's kind of a shithead. I guess not take him.
He'd probably go for Diane because he wouldn't understand how everyone else's powers worked.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to go for the best available option, you'd go for Merlin, but, you know.
Yeah. I'd probably say that, who from My Hero? I don't know if he'd take Bakugo.
He'd go for All Might, Chris.
Well, but then it's cheating, right?
He'd go for All Might.
Fine, he'd go for All Might. Well, no, because All Might has no powers anymore, so All Might be worthless.
That is true.
I think maybe he'd go with, he might actually just go with Bakugo. I guess Bakugo would
He'd go for Fat Gum because he would give him candy.
Oh, that is true. Fat Gum is pretty dope.
Fat Gum is pretty great.
Yeah. I don't think you take anyone from Food Wars because none of them can fight.
They would be able to fight.
Dr. Stone, I don't think you would take anyone from that.
Tsukasa!
Why would you take Tsukasa? He was going to kill him.
Statues with his bare hands.
But a lion was going to kill him.
With his bare hands.
Yeah, I don't know. The idea is that a gun can stop him. I feel like Dragon Ball Z characters have essentially the equivalent of guns.
Okay, fine. You would go for Sanosuke from Kenshin or something.
All right, that's good. I like that. And then, yeah, I guess that's it. All right, nailed it. Boom. Done, done, and done. Also, Chad. All right, question three. If you were to arrange a universal survival tournament with 13 different jump series, which series would you choose and who would their teams be? To save time, each series can be made of just 4 to 5
teams. Oh, to save time, we'll choose 4 members for 13 different fuck off.
I feel like here's what we should do. Because I actually like this question, Wingrama Yasha. However, at this late in the game, it's difficult for us to do this. Send this question in with a note of saying, save this for the start of one of your next Q&As. And that's what we'll do. We'll save it for, like, the start of a new Q&A and do it then. Because
if you want to do, like, a crossover thing, then it would be like, okay, well, obviously it would be like, okay, DBZ, Naruto, One Piece, Bleach, Rurouni Kenshin, Yu Yu Hakusho, Toriko.
It is also one of those things where I sit here and I'm just like, I mean, first and foremost, most of the series are automatically going to be eliminated. Just like, no one from the One Piece world can compete with Dragon Ball Z characters or shit like
or
that.
Or even
like,
if it is a fight.
Or JoJo characters. Bleach, Bleach characters have so crazy powers, no one can really compete with them. Hmm. Like, it's one of those things where I'm like, why even bother putting, like, inviting Rurouni Kenshin when it's like the craziest thing Kenshin could do is make a vacuum with his fucking sword somehow.
Good point.
Alright. Question 4. If Luffy wanted to become a Pokemon Master instead of King of the Pirates, what Pokemon would he have on his team? You can either give him a standard team of 6 or only one Pokemon representing one member of the Straw Hats, whichever you prefer.
Well, if it were just going to be like a standard team of 6, then you just know that Luffy would just like find like one Pokemon that he liked and then just like get 6 of it.
That is right. He would. He'd just be like, holy shit, like, this Primeape is awesome. Let's send 6 of them.
Primeapes, exactly. And then he'd constantly be beating them up because they'd be stealing his hat from him.
Yeah, like he fights with his Pokemon. That's how he trains them. Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. Yeah, I don't even want to do the Straw Hat version of it.
Partial answer for the Straw Hats one. Right. You have a Samurott for Zoro.
Okay.
On Lee for Sanji. He'd have a Sawsbuck for Chopper because it's a deer that has multiple forms.
Okay.
Ambipom for Robin, has multiple hands. Poliwrath for Jinbei, because Jinbei's almost a Straw Hat now.
Yeah, I can see it.
And that's where I ran out, so I came up with 5, but I couldn't think of a 6th one. I couldn't think of one for Nami or Frankie or Brooke.
Would be appropriate. Frankie? This has got to be like a wacky ghost that would fit for Brooke. Stopped caring. All right, question 5. Sorry, we're running out of time. Question 5. If you were given the chance to make a manga, what would it be about? Additionally, if you were to give a chance.
This question before.
Yes.
But.
If you were given a chance to make a WMR manga, what would it be like? I think we made a joke about it just being us trying to make a podcast better than the woodworkers. Like it's Bakuman podcasting and we can't beat the woodworkers.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for the question.
Bacon.
This is Jonah Bacon Lekowitz.
Jonah Bacon. Hey there, Nick. Blanche is dead, never coming back. And Chris, Otwinahana, you're such a whore.
I get it. It's an old Golden Girls thing.
First of all, I think I have a theory as to why Black Clover seems to be so unsatisfying for readers. Every chapter seems to end with a victory for the heroes. Whether it's someone being saved, acid deflecting blast, or the heroes getting a hit on the villain, every chapter will end in the hero's favor. Problem because not only is it hard to build tension, but tension often has to be contained within that one chapter before some resolution at the end.
Yeah, I get it.
Anyway, questions. Nick, after your recommendation, I watched Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5 and greatly enjoyed it, so I'd like to ask who are your favorite characters, and are you as disappointed as I am that Masumi never got to do anything after the first arc? I am, because Masumi had a great rivalry going with Yuzu, and then that was never followed up on. From what I understand, because I stopped watching it, I just kind of fell off right around the time that they went into the 5D's equivalent world. From what I've heard, it actually got really bleh after that point. For example, Yuzu, who was treated as a main character, does not get a duel at all in the final arc, which is bullshit. In terms of my favorite characters, I do really like Yuzu, and I love the fuck out of Sora. And in fact, I had miniature fights with some of my friends about his rivalry with what's-his-face bullshit. I drew 3 copies of my monster again, guy. Okay. This one's for both of you. Since you've often talked about your favorite characters in One Piece and World Trigger, I'd like to ask who are your 3 favorites in My Hero Academia and Food Wars. I did include Promised Neverland because there are like 8 people in that manga.
My Hero, I don't know if I can answer, because I feel like my favorites in that series change pretty frequently. I've started to really come to like Kirishima, but, you know, I don't know if that's just because he's been featured recently, so I can enjoy him from that. But when it comes to Food Wars, I think my favorites are probably like Alice, Hayama, and probably Soma. I think Soma's just a lot of fun in general, and I enjoy Alice anytime she's on screen, and Hayama's just like a good, like, rival figure, I think, in the series.
Bakugo, Suyu, and Jiro.
Okay.
And Erina, Megumi, and Kurokiba.
Nailed it.
Finally, out of all the manga you've covered during the recap that are no longer in the magazine, which would you want back the most due to how fun it was to recap, not necessarily how good the manga was?
I would love to get Gakkyu Hotei back.
Exactly.
I think Gakkyu Hotei was just so much fun to talk about, and playing like the Phoenix Wright music and voice acting. It was so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love to have that back.
100% there with you. Yeah.
All right. Question here from Satellite of Love. Dear Nick and Chris, Disturbed's cover of Sound of Silence, yay or nay? I'm personally on defense about it. Oh, it's nay. It's incredibly nay. That is awful.
Like it, no.
It's so weird hearing a guy like trying, like a metal band trying to like do those high notes, like, and it's like, no, you're
it's
not
really,
meant for
it's
that.
It's really not. His voice is not appropriate
it's
for that
like,
song.
You no. Don't do this. Stop.
What was the song they did by Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For? That used to be my least favorite cover of theirs, but it's Sound of Silence now. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of awful ones out there. That one fits.
Absolutely love their Land of Confusion cover, though.
Yeah.
I think that's...
I'll just do the next one, so that was short. Question from Jack Lebrano. Dear Mr. Freeman and Sir Larios Esquire III. Awesome. Now that Nick has been properly introduced to Stans through part 3, and possibly part 4 by the time this email gets to you, nope. Could you tell me who are your favorite enemy Stan users? Not the main villains, or even the Stans attached to their minions, but the minions themselves.
I fucking love the Sun Guys.
Arabia Fats, who we never actually learn in the actual series itself,
he
had to be told to us.
Follows the heroes around on his mirror cart and does nothing but...
In like a thing with like an air conditioning with them, and then just get knocked out in one rock to the face. Like, oh.
So terrible.
I love Hall Horse. Hall Horse was so much fun. I love that, like, seeing that dude. Like, he was essentially like this wacky Team Rocket, although he gets a more grisly end after his exploits. But I do just love this guy who's just a complete, like, shit heel chicken goober who just tries to get them, but he fails in every way. But he's still kind of cool at that same time. I dug him a lot. I always enjoyed him.
And wasn't there, like, some guy that he worked with, I think?
Well,
an actual badass?
Well, he worked with Jay Giles at first, which is the guy who had the Hanged Man stand, the one who killed Polnareff's sister and had the mirror stand, essentially. So that guy was very cool. And then he worked with Oingo Boingo later on. I love the music stands.
Yeah, I love them, too. Okay. All right. Come on. Fucking load.
I'll just say it's questions
for... name on this one?
Yeah, thank you, Base James, at the end.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, Nick, first rule of what WMR is, you do not talk about Red Right to Left. And Chris, I hear your goddamn Baron Tamaga voice in my sleep.
What? No.
So February was a couple of months ago, I assume, and it got me thinking about some February-related questions. Question 1. Finral from the Black Bulls somehow manages to score a date with Urza for Valentine's Day. And he comes to you for advice on how to, as he puts it, powder the pudding.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Knowing what you know of Urza, what date advice would you give Finral? Be Jalal.
Yeah. If you can get a magic that changes you into Jalal, get that.
Sorry, I mean, like, Urza seems to be, kinda hopelessly involved with him, despite the fact that I don't really get it, so. Number 2, keeping with the love theme, when the internet was born, it was like a pervert A-bomb detonated. I went on xhamster.com, they have 252 different categories of porn, and that's just counting the straight stuff, so I have to wonder, in world of My Hero Academia,
it's
shapeshifters, animal people, and Lord knows what else, what new categories of porn must exist?
I imagine...
Well, given your suggestions, I think that we've already got our answers.
I would say there is no need for DeviantArt in that world because all the drawings of porn that people could get to, they don't need to because real people could just do it.
I mean, there are so many weird, like, supernatural fetishes that people have that would be completely possible in the world of My Hero Academia. It would be, let's face it, a booming industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there would be so much catering to individual fetishes that, Jesus. Number three. I'm black.
What?
I have a, yeah.
I'm like, what?
I'm black and I've got a habit of getting needlessly attached to every black character who shows up in manga, even if they're objectively terrible, such as Bob McHarr from O-Grade's other long-running, much more insulting series, Tenjo Tenge. In honor of Black History Month, what are your most memorable black characters from manga? I have to say that a lot of them do tend to unfortunately get the short end of the stick. There's a weird treatment of black people in just the general culture of Japan.
I really always, even though the very unfortunate whole premise of the thing, I loved Panther and Ice Shield 21. Like, the muscles of the black man is still unfortunate, but I loved that there was a rival for Senna that was friendly with him, that it wasn't this intense thing like he had with Shin or even Riku, that it was somebody who we both kind of, like, met with a smile and was friends about it. I always really dug Panther and that story that was told within him.
It was very strange to have him in that series because he was such a stereotypical character, but at the same time did recognize the fact that, hey, racism's bad. Let's do a story arc about it.
Yeah.
So, I'll go with that.
I don't know if you'll count this one or not, but okay. Abdul from JoJo, I mean, I don't even know how to phrase it, so I'm not even going to try to. But I enjoy Abdul a lot, and I thought it was really cool to get a character of that kind of nationality and that kind of representation in a series that wasn't, like, a parody or anything like that. He was just a part of the group.
I have always liked Killer Bee.
Oh, Killer Bee is a great one. Killer Bee is a great one.
Yeah. I mean, when they actually started to expand on him and made him have, like, a more serious backstory, it's like, oh, okay, so, you know, he's not just a...
He's not just a black guy in a series who raps...
As entertaining as he fucking is, considering that he, you know, does dances and raps while kicking Sasuke's ass.
It's so fucked up, though, right? Like, the first black guy in the series, and he's like, my thing is rapping, yo!
Woo! What was the character in Black Lagoon that we were like, oh, he seems cool, and then he never showed up?
Oh, God, I'm trying to think.
Is it like, God, fucking hell, what was his name? I can't even fucking remember because he never did any goddamn thing.
No anymore. On my mind,
Dutch.
Oh, that yeah, Dutch. That's it. Yeah. Who, if you were like, if you were
going to make nothing.
If you were going to make a live action movie of this, you'd make it like you put Rock in that role, but then you'd have to make that dude the main character because there's no way Rock would agree to just be like, I'll stand around for a while and do nothing.
All right. Question four, I'm pretty sure the first time I got suspended from school for fighting was in February, so what's the most brutal fight scene you've read in a manga? I'm talking Terry Funk versus Cactus Jack in the King of the Deathmatch Vicious. To clarify, I don't necessarily mean the best or goriest fight you've read. I'm not sure.
The most brutal fight scene.
Brutal without being gory, but okay.
The battle with, and I've done this, like, brought this up too many times, but it's the first one that came to mind with, Crowley versus, Jabvoya and D. Greyman was a very brutal fight. If only because of the way it kind of, like, hit its, like, ending note of a man being crushed inside of an Iron Maiden and then his, like, manifested blood coming out to fight the antagonist afterwards. I was like, that was pretty fucking brutal.
Fair number of the fights in Shamo, including the one where he totally stabs the dude's eye out with his toe.
There are a shit ton, now that I'm thinking about it, from JoJo as well, especially some of the later parts.
Yeah.
There are some JoJo fights where you're like, oh my god, this is so brutal.
This is not, to go in the, along the line where you said it doesn't necessarily have to be gory, but it's super brutal. Takamura's got some ridiculous fights in Hajime no Ippo. In particular during the build up to, and then his fight with Brian Hawk, because he first off, when he sees Hawk, like, watching his fight, he gets really pissed off, so he decides to punch his opponent out of the ring. Mm. Yeah. And then when he actually fights Hawk, they hit each other so much and so hard that by the end of it, Hawk, like, when he, right before he collapses, literally vomits blood up. So, there you go.
Yeah. A lot of good ones in that. Tommy Rod versus Toriko is a pretty brutal one, too.
Right, yeah, of course.
All right. Maybe
we're really close to finishing January, but should we just close on this one?
Yeah, we can. Hey, Chris, Rolo-T-ing out those Trollo-T trivia questions like true or false, Urza has made more friendship speeches than Taya Gardner Larios. And Nick, why am I the ruler of time? Well, me, X, the ruler of love, and Z, the ruler of death, pretend to be actors hired by Edward Norton to teach Will Smith how to accept the passing of his daughter. Good thing Trollo-T trivia doesn't extend to terrible Oscar bait movies that only nab a Razzie Freeman. I have some questions for you. I don't even know that reference.
That's fucking brutal.
Collateral Beauty, I think it is. I think it's a reference too. Question one.
I don't know.
Unless it's somehow changed by the time you actually got this query, Asta is still an annoyingly obnoxious git interfering in nearly every single plot point of Black Clover. However, an issue I do find to be annoying with shonen manga in general is either always building up or giving focus to the lead in the series, even if it takes away from the story's overall progression. Do you think it's an issue that is standard with the genre or a problem that mangaka could work on fixing in the future?
It is, it is something that is a symptom of a lot of different manga where it's, yeah, you're right, it just put too much focus on one character, but I think that a lot of it has to do with kind of image and marketing. You know, they're the mm-hmm. face of the series, and so they want to have them be prominent so that people won't, you know, I guess get distracted, and forget, oh yeah, of course. In general, also, of course, you know, the main character in a manga tends to be the most popular, so having them have a prominent role tends to attract people to reading it, and so thus they stay strong in reader polls and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think it says a lot that most of the series we tend to enjoy the most are series that usually give the spotlight to someone else at different points in time. Like, I wouldn't say One Piece is a series that only ever lets Luffy get a time in the spotlight. Like, there's a lot of time where, you know, we'll just completely forget about Luffy for a while and focus on someone else, basically. It is, though, an inherent issue with the genre that I don't know if this is necessarily an issue. It's just something to watch so it doesn't detract from the story. But obviously, when you have a lead character, you have a pronounced protagonist, then you do want to focus on them, and you are going to want to give them the spotlight because they're sort of the driving force behind your series.
Mm-hmm.
Two, since I asked a while back, what are your guys' favorite Soul Society Captain 7 Warlords of the Sea, would you be able to do your ranking of your least favorite to favorite members of the Akatsuki? And not kind of people who were part of the organization previously, like Orochimaru, but I mean the actual main antagonists of Part 2.
Okay, I don't like Zetsu. I think that he was kind of worthless.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
I feel like he'd kind of fall into that, if nothing else, but that he didn't end up doing anything, really. He just,
working for Kaguya the whole time.
Yeah, it was like at the very end, they were just like, oh, hey, this dude's actually like a portal or something, and like there's a bunch of evil versions of him that get to become ninja or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So Zetsu, I think, at the bottom. Then I guess Konan, because she also didn't really get to do much. She was always just kind of Pain's second, and she didn't become more prominent until after he died, and then she was no longer part of the Akatsuki because she, you know, decided to be good and then got killed. So yeah.
She didn't really have any like moment of to herself either. Like there was no real moment of like holy shit Conan or anything.
She was never her own character. She was always attached to Pain's backstory, and that was it. I guess Kisame. I was never really a big fan of him. He never seemed to grow out of what he was on the surface, which was scary shark guy. Kakuzu was kind of cool. I liked that he was just very straightforward. I'm all about the money, and he just kind of stuck to that. Hidan was just really easily hateable, and I liked that.
I'm about to be blown away because I'm like, hold on, this is pretty high on the list, and Itachi hasn't come up.
I think Itachi right around there, honestly.
Man. All right, fair enough.
I mean, he was a lot better right before.
He was a good guy the whole time.
Don't understand. He's the best.
God. I guess Pain, I think, after that, didn't really like the way that he went down. And then Deidara.
Oh.
And then, Sasori. Was the best, let's face it. Sasori was the best, had the best, like, involvement in it.
Well, it also kind of helps that, like, beating Sasori felt like this huge thing, and you almost came to the expectation that, like, oh, every member of Akatsuki, like, defeating them is going to be this significant of a thing. And then it's Sasuke.
They're not just gonna get Chidori'd by Sasuke and that's it.
Yeah, it's not like Sasuke's gonna just randomly beat one of them on his way back home or something like that. Like, ah. Nah, I agree with the list there. I think you got it nailed pretty good. Question three. This is something I forgot to ask you when Bleach was ending, but I'm asking here. Who do you think was a better final antagonist? Yuubak of Bleach or Madara of Naruto? Not counting Kaguya because obviously she was a failure of a final boss since he was just using Madara's body doesn't count. So just thinking between Yuubak or Madara, which one was better? I'd probably say Yuubak just because even Madara was still that sort of thing because Madara was like the surprise villain after Obito. Like, we had just been like, oh, Obito's the villain, and then Madara took his body, basically. Not directly, but he just took that role suddenly. Like, I'm the antagonist. It's like, eh. I think I just like that Yuubak was what he was from the very beginning. He's like, yeah. I'm gonna be the bad guy, and at first I kinda thought I was more about Quincy's, but fuck it, I'm just gonna recreate reality, or whatever.
Yeah.
He does it.
His plan made more sense, and also his motivations didn't get compromised by some sympathetic backstory at the end.
And finally, how would you rank the least to most intelligent members of the Straw Hats? I think we all know who'd be at the bottom and top, but how about the others in between that rank? Alright, okay. I almost feel like I need a pen and paper to like think this out, but Luffy's obviously the bottom.
Luffy's got to be the bottom.
Luffy's the bottom. Then probably, because then I want to say like Chopper, but Chopper's a doctor.
Chopper would have a low wisdom score and a high intelligence.
Yeah. If we're thinking just like intelligence, probably Zoro's next then, right? Because he's not smart. I mean, the dude gets lost in a straight hallway.
Right.
Right.
But he's you know, a great leader and he's got a lot of wisdom to him. But yeah, he's, in terms of, especially of book smarts, he's really stupid. He might even be dumber than Luffy in that respect. Well,
yeah.
He's very close.
Then maybe Usopp?
Usopp's, yeah, like, I guess, just a generally average intelligence when it doesn't come to scheming or tricking.
Because I'm trying to, like, think. I'm like, almost everyone else from here on in is actually meant to be intelligent. Maybe, like, my question now is, like,
a specialization of
like,
theirs.
Who is it between Brook and Sanji for me? I'd say Sanji's more intelligent because they've made mention, it's been a distinct fact that he's avoided situations or, you know, come out ahead by thinking ahead. So I'd probably say Brook and then Sanji.
And then the other four all have ridiculous fields of knowledge that make them.
I'd say probably it might go then like Nami, because Nami isn't, she's sharp, but she's not like, she wouldn't have a degree necessarily just from her own base intelligence. So I'd probably say like Nami, Chopper, Franky, and then Robin at the top.
Right, because Robin's field of knowledge is a super specialized thing. She's like one of a few people in the entire world who can read the
So I'd probably say like going from the bottom up, be like Luffy, Zoro, Usopp, Brook, Sanji, Nami, Chopper, Franky, Robin. But this is something we put together in, you know, a minute with no real prep. So,
and also that's entirely based on like a kind of book smart way of looking at things. If you're talking about, you know, who would make the most intelligent decisions in any given situation, then you could come up with a different order based on the situation you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different ways. But yeah, I think that's going to do it. We're going to have to wrap things up here.
Yes.
So, thanks guys for sending all your questions. We really appreciate them. Keep on sending those in. Remember, of course, if you happen to have, an answer to the question that Chris asked at the beginning, that you can also send that in to us, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, to send both questions and answers. And, we'll be ready to talk about this stuff again next month.
Yes. So stay tuned for that, guys. Thank you all for listening. I hope you guys all enjoyed yourselves, and we'll catch you for the next Q&A sometime in the magical month of June.